Hey, welcome to A-Team Podcast. Glad you're here. In this conversation, we talk about finding autistic community, the new term profound autism, do-it-yourself body piercings, our love of science, and a bad racist date. Thanks for listening.
Okay, can you pull the door open a little more? I'm going to pull it now.
Hey, Tango, how are you?
Good, fine. Readjusting. Yes, not great at switching tasks. Just finished task 2 minutes ago.
Were you doing anything interesting?
Learning more about the Mighty Networks update, because I'm going to do a big update to Audicom in December.
Very cool. Very cool. I have had my brain stuck on... I've had my brain stuck on one of two subjects. For some reason, I've just taken an interest in body modification and piercings and stuff. And so it's kind of been stuck in my brain. So obviously, I did the only sensible thing, realizing that I have a very high pain threshold because I'm not very sensitive. I decided to order... the stuff that a piercer uses, like the needles and the clamps and everything else, and jewelry online, and start learning to pierce by piercing myself.
Well, at least you're doing that as an adult and not like me as a young teenager.
Yeah. and it will be done with sterilizer.
I pierced myself and friends in high school. Not recommending.
Like, what did you use?
Say what?
Like I'm getting like surgical needles. Like I'm getting proper like needles that they use for with the attachments you can slide the rings in and stuff. What did you use? Like a biro with a needle on it, like in jail or something?
Some of them were, and you know, I cleaned my equipment, but I mean some of them were safety pins and some of them were
with a lighter.
Yes. And some, well, and rubbing alcohol, I would use like 3 or 4 different methods. I'm like 13 at the time.
I'm just really picturing you in a juvenile detention.
That's the thing, is like...
tattooing people with your little needle.
Also, we upgraded to needles that my friend got from her mom, who was a veterinarian. And her mom's like, I feel like I can't stop you guys, so at least use these. And don't pierce these certain things. but it's funny you say that.
That's just good. Like
one of those like straight A, never in detention, never got in trouble, goody two. That was like
was
my
not.
Style of autism is follow the rules and just make it back to my bedroom at the end of the day so I can go cry in my closet and do it all again the next day.
Wow.
You got in trouble.
Oh, man. I actually had a conversation with someone who wrote to Robert, actually, who is from Ireland. I had an interesting conversation with him. I've been trying to work on another sort of small piece of something that I've been working on, like recording thing, where I'm talking to different people from different age groups who are autistic and the experience and how it's changing. And I happen to be speaking to a big fan of Robert's. And he... was telling me fascinating stuff. Like, so he's about 10 or so years older than me and grew up in Ireland. And I could never explain why when I was really young, everyone was afraid of being hit by the teachers. And I never thought to look it up why it stopped all of a sudden. But obviously in 1984, they brought in a law that literally stopped it. So being a bit older than me, his experience was super similar to mine, but his had a lot more violence in it by the sounds of it. But basically the same sort of people educating us and little had changed other than the level of aggression from teachers, physical aggression from teachers.
Fun.
But a really interesting guy and a really interesting conversation about growing up in Ireland and obviously late diagnosis, so you didn't know and the experience of doing that. Yeah, that's another thing I was doing this week.
I'm like, wait, there's got to be more.
There is. There's a lot more. It was like a long conversation.
What are you doing? Are you Are you recording these conversations?
I am. I intend to, and they're not so much conversations as me asking a series of questions to kind of, or getting them to talk about their experiences. So it's not so much me talking as me listening, which is hard for me to believe, but I can do it.
Do you have a plan for this content? Or are you just saving it for a rainy day and a good idea?
So I kind of have an idea, but like, I don't know exactly where it is yet. So I'm basically doing the recording to see how it, I'm a kind of a believer in the whole thing of like, start painting and a painting will appear. You can have an idea or whatever, but sometimes you just have to do the project and see. So I've got a vague outline, and all my years of artistic experience, well, the last year, that's my whole artistic creative period. Prior to that, I have never done anything creative in my life. It might be nearly 2 years now, because I've started taking to more creative things, because I never wanted to be the oddball. And traditionally, anyone who was an arty type was always the oddball. And being an autistic person, I was trying to pretend to be as normal as humanly possible and not let anyone know what craziness was going on inside my head. I think they call it masking. I don't know.
See, if I blended in with a crowd, I felt like I was losing myself and like I would die. Like, I had the opposite.
No, I wanted to stop being bullied and being thought of as an idiot. I just wanted to kind of disappear into the crowd and be as normal as humanly possible. It was never going to happen for me.
I guess if I was, that makes a good point. If I was still being bullied into high school, I probably would have been very different. But I guess that was like the age or the hormone change where I became smarter than my bullies. So then I was just mean back to them and then it stopped.
Oh, that didn't happen till I was about the last year of high school when I started brawling. I got in some serious vicious fights in the last year of school, and then all the bullying stopped.
Woof.
It was what it was.
Well, we both fought back just in different ways.
And I didn't do particularly well in these fights. I was never a good fighter.
You showed up.
But I was there and I fought hard enough that people were like, well, maybe we don't want to hassle him because he's willing to throw punches. You don't have to be particularly good at it. You just have to be willing to do it. And most people who are hassling other people just want the fun of hassling them without any repercussions.
Yeah, exactly.
So even if they win, the only way to win a fight is not be in it. Because like, if you get punched even once, you've lost. Like, you just got punched. What did you gain by fighting some guy? You got punched in the face. Great, you got to beat some guy up, but you also got punched in the face. Happy days. Yay. So I think they also were operating on that logic. Which works.
Yeah. Sorry, my brain, I was like, I don't think I've ever been in a fight. And then I did punch one girl on Halloween. I don't really think that counted as a fight.
I have tasted metal ring things to my face many times, and it was not pleasant.
Oof. Yeah.
That was a long, long time ago.
On this topic.
I have no idea, because I haven't thought of that in maybe 25 years. And because I was talking about speaking to people being brought up in Ireland in the past, and okay, it makes sense. And then it went back to my childhood and the violence involved in everyday street life in Ireland. It's a lovely place. And I lived in a nice part. I can't imagine what it was like.
In the nice part?
Yeah.
I didn't get much of any education on Ireland aside from American stereotypes.
That's
and I was
close
about
enough.
To say I recently rewatched Derry Girls, but I have no idea how accurate that is.
That's a hilariously funny show. And actually pretty accurate.
I love that show.
It's comic, but it's very much the Derry sense of humor as well, that particular area. I thought that was quite funny, actually. And like, it's not 100% accurate, it's still a comedy show, but the general attitudes and stuff, it's actually not a bad example of rural, of a more, I suppose it's not even really rural Ireland. Yeah, of Derry.
Yeah, it made
particular.
Me think of like rural small towns in Midwest America, but
they're not the Derry region. Isn't really considered a small town. Ireland just has lots of tiny towns, so we consider that a big city. No.
No, that's fair. That's like when I was living in places with less than 100 people, so anywhere with more than 100
1,000 people is a huge city.
is a city.
Yeah. Oh, you're going into the big smoke. Woo. They used to call Dublin the big smoke. Because it was...
I don't know what that means.
It was literally because they saw it as an industrial town. Like the rest of Ireland would see Dublin as like the industrial part of the country because the rest of it would be farming and more rural. But it was a very weird term.
So relatively.
It's still a tiny city.
Funny because it's not very big.
Because okay. it's like, I think it's about 1.5 million now.
Oh, okay. All right.
And that's tiny.
Indianapolis, capital of Indiana, has more people than that. That's where I'm like, I only know the population of a few cities.
Yeah, when I moved to Toronto and realized that Dublin was quite a small city.
Mm. How big is Toronto?
I think it's about 7 million or something in just the city area, or in the greater Toronto area, like 7 odd million, something like that.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, I never thought I'd live back in the many thousands of people land after living off-grid for 5 years.
Yeah, I can't imagine that was a pleasant nice for a while, but then you're like, oh, I'm actually here.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I learned a lot. I did a lot of growing up. I have oodles of gratitude for it.
Nice.
Again, I don't know what we're talking about. I kind of wanted to talk about that article you shared in chat.
Which one? Sorry, I read so many. Like,
it was the one I responded with a big response.
Sorry.
Time to embrace profound autism.
Oh, that was an interesting article, actually. And I wasn't like, I didn't know what to make of that myself. I was kind of, that's why I was a little bit, there's some logic to what she's saying. And then there's some parts of it make me feel that there's not. And I think that's when I tend to share it with you guys. When I'm like, I can't wrap my head around this. Can someone actually have a different point of view that I'm not seeing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And reading that took me back. Like I don't like Google a lot of autism stuff anymore. And then being on this podcast has kind of like gotten me back in that groove. But I'm remembering kind of what turned me off all those years ago is I just don't like a lot of, you know, the rhetoric around it. I don't like how we're talked about or what people think is helpful services, ABA. And uh-huh. but so then reading this, it was like having a fresh insight, having not read something like this in a long time. But just to start, that off the top, there was that estimated 50%. Like it might be like 50-50, like higher functioning and mostly higher functioning, mostly lower functioning folks. To use really clunky language, because we all know that our own functioning levels change day to day.
She said, like, I think she said in that article that like what, above 50% of all autistic people have above average IQ or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't double check where the data was from or how many people. So I don't know how
approximately
much
50
statistic, but it's interesting to think about.
But approximately 50% of people are above average is what she effectively said. So of course they are, because 50% have to be above it kind of thing, and 50% have to be kind of below the average, like for it to be the average kind of.
Well, no, what you copy pasted here says estimated close to 50% of the autism population falls into the category of profound autism, which is the trying to pitch here, which I think is what people often call low functioning or severe autism.
It's basically what I would
people
call
who have
three needs,
like way more support needs.
Yeah, so level three needs.
What I presume
most people would call level three needs. Like, effectively, they need a lot more daily support to function. But it doesn't, it's not reflective of their IQ. It's not reflective of their many other things about them. And it's not reflective of their right to exist or their, like, their value as a member of society. And
I can't believe we have to say that, but yes.
But yeah, and that's what shocked me about the art. I could see if she tried to say, I think what she wanted to say was basically, there are a lot of autistic people who need a lot of support, and we should remember that. Mm-hmm. There was no need to come up with a new term for it or anything else, but just to say that there are people who need support. And we know it. There's disabling effects of autism. And in our current society, a lot of...
I really feel like she went to thesaurus.com and typed in severe.
Yeah, and then decided...
And was just like, oh, we'll call it profound.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It was sorry. And for anyone who's listening, there's an article we read about someone arguing for
So basically, yeah, the article's called "It's Time to Embrace Profound Autism." It's on Spectrum News. I'm sure we'll link it in the show notes. Julie, our blind editor, is saying that profound is an old term, so we might also just be going back to, and this makes sense, we like to, the trend is coming back around. But the point being, I think, is that, I'm just going to be clunky for the sake of being a binary, even though we know that's not how it works, but for the more higher functioning folks, we're becoming more visible because people are like creating accounts and talking about it. There's communities, there's podcasts. People are learning more about autism in that way. And I think the folks, especially the caretakers of people at the other end of the spectrum, who are more of the
higher
level
needs.
Three needs, I think is what you were saying. I don't know why they feel like they have to see us as the enemy. Like we don't need to be more quiet for you to get heard. I would also like for autistic folks with level three needs to be more visible and understood and have services and all.
So the article, so the article said to me, it was written by a caregiver who wants people to see her child as severely disabled because she wants to be gratified for all the stuff she's doing. And she feels that if autistic people get a say in what's going on, then her heroism, her heroic mother bear thing won't be as important. That she's not the one who's gratified by, well, it read a little bit to me like that. That it was very much.
No, you could tell I really tried to read around that.
Yeah,
can't take it anymore because I read so much of it.
It did scream to me like it wasn't so much people with profound as opposed to her cross to bear or her burden, and it shouldn't, these newfound self-standing crosses are taking all the limelight. I want to be the light to be on me for carrying this burden, and it was just not. And my main point in...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think your main point...
In the article was, there was like, do we need to have a... irrelevant to that woman's need to justify her own existence or waving. Do we actually need to have a distinction between the different, more clear distinction between the different levels of autism that is more... usable in a headline so that people can be clear who they're talking about and what kind of needs they were, what struggles they would face in a daily life. And is that a relevant, besides her poor writing and whatever else and her way of, was there a nugget of truth in the article that there is some need for separation into different categories that are more clear?
I feel like underneath the article, I could kind of hear what she was talking about, but on top, she was using a weird, victim kind of rhetoric, blah, 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 I had to get to the bottom of.
Absolutely.
I guess the thing I'm talking around that I could just be more direct with is that there's it's kind of mean. The article's kind of mean. I think that's part of what you're pointing at. Like she says, that means for every autistic person trying to get a job at Microsoft, there's also one who can't grasp the concept of what Microsoft is or does. Do you feel that it's mean?
Yes, absolutely. I think I compared her child to a cross that she had to carry.
Oh, yes, that's the feel. Yes.
And she was. I also said such great stuff as she's very annoyed by... She's very annoyed by these crosses that seem to be able to stand on their own. Us semi-verbal
autistic. Yeah, I was like, why do you have to make other autistic people your enemy? That's...
Yeah, no, because she wasn't getting the limelight on her and how hard her struggle was. It might actually transfer to the child and how hard their struggle is.
Yeah.
And it won't be all about her and how what she needs. And it gave me very much this, she didn't see her child as a human being.
That's what I was just like, about it, to just, point and, out and it say was weird. Why I stopped reading all of these things is because it's...
I read it and I was like, you're the mother of this child, but you don't... Like, I guess, I get you care and you would do anything for your child, but it also seems at the same time as it's more the concept of your child than actually your child that you care about.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be the great mother who does everything you can do for this child, but you don't actually see them as a child who has needs. You see them as this burden. Like, it did not read well for me. It felt unpleasant.
Yeah. No, it occurs to me that I've all long been interested in psychology, but started doing a lot more deep dive into that. And this is even post college, because that's when I figured out I was autistic. But it was after all reading all of these things, because I'm like, what's wrong with all of these people that they're not treating this autistic human like a human? Like, I'm beginning to see from autism research into other things. And it's reminding me, and I want to say this because it's authentic, is that I did, you know, like I've said, I looked up female autism, finally started reading those kinds of things. It really, like, self-diagnosed, it felt like 100% correct. And then I started doing more reading, ran into a lot of rhetoric like this that's really dehumanizing, mm-hmm. or infantilizing. And I actually just stopped talking about it, stopped researching it, stopped thinking about it, basically went back in the autism closet for like a year, until other things in my life were kind of like falling apart and I needed to address that and it was made real. But like, I don't know, it was that internalized ableism. I was like, oh, I don't like this, or I don't feel good about this.
It's not, I wouldn't call it internal ableism. It is awareness that other people are ableist and mm-hmm. how you function. It's getting fed up getting treated. And I actually, if I wasn't on this podcast, would have most definitely done that.
Yeah.
There was definitely a period when I began to start doing it, like, and I was questioning whether even I do it now when I was talking about artists, and would you come out if you were a famous artist or whatever, would you admit to being autistic? Because before this, you're quirky and interesting and eccentric and the art scene loves you, and then you're just another autistic person.
Yeah.
Who's disabled. And so, like, there definitely would be, and more I'm reading, I'm constantly reading articles and like, and there's a lot of stuff looking for cures and,
yep.
and I'm like, a cure is I get that there's stuff you want to help people with,
mm-hmm.
but cure is a dangerous word. Like, and then it's blaming it on a lot of it on digestion issues and stuff. And like, no, there's lots of serious research going into the assumption that it's something to do with our biome, like gut bacteria and stuff, actually, because it seems to be more and more that, like, all the things that live inside us are actually wired into our system.
Our brain biome, I don't know if you know this, but we're learning that almost everything, like the whole concept of the blood-brain barrier, is mostly not true.
Yeah.
Like, you even have colonized bacteria, you know, in your brain. Is good for you. And we're learning about the nervous system, how trauma, what it is, how to move it, work, you know, heal it, that kind of, like, this is really new.
One of my favorite
all of this autism stuff is just slowly catching up. So when people, like, I brought this up because when you say things like they think it's digestion stuff, those are, you're like, that's an imbalanced
billions of bacteria
and trauma of your sensitive, I think an autistic person just has a super sensitive nervous system. So it's easier to throw off balance. But then
they're also saying that the thrown off digestive system, because your brain's development and stuff, and it's, for example, I was reading an article that was saying that they discovered in some fish that, how they do this is amazing. They did some experiments with a fish and socializing through a glass mirror to another fish.
Mm-hmm.
But they discovered that if they upset their biome, their digestive system, it prevented them pruning certain, the gene never activated to prune certain chains of neurons in their brain, so they became less socially adept. And they're saying it could be a similar thing. So it's a two-way system. It might be caused by our diet, but like
chicken or egg.
Yeah, exactly. And like there's amazing things being discovered about this. Like the brain sciences I've been reading are like, I love the way the fact that even all of our old history comes up. Do you know the way they always say, thinking with your heart, not your head, is an old expression. Mm-hmm. So they've discovered there are literally neurons in your heart. Yeah. So you can literally think with your heart. So that feeling of thinking with your heart and passion might actually just be you thinking with that part of your body.
Well, and we used
because
to think
it's
that,
not just inside the brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we used to think that what made a neuron special was that it communicated with electrical signals. And we now know that every cell in the body can communicate with electrical signals. So there's a lot more information to be sent and moved mm-hmm. than we originally realized. Or you know what I meant, originally, earlier, whatever.
And then
with all of this cutting edge science, it's going to take a while for it to sort of like trickle down the Plinko board into like what relates to autism and how can we turn that relation into like a support or a service or something.
And then hence in 10 years, there won't be a diagnosis of autism. There will just be, you need this support. You don't, you do.
Yeah.
There's so much to it. Like even there's like crazy stuff, like all the quantum physics and stuff, how our body, we might not be aware of how our body's interacting with other cells within our body mm-hmm. on a quantum level. Like it's amazing what where science is taking us and the things it's researching and discovering is just, it's wonderful. I love science. It's great.
Are you reading about the latest Nobel Prize in physics? Is that
in the quantum entanglement
theorem?
I've been listening to stuff on it. It's really interesting. There's like some like just amazing. I was just even discovering some of the guy who kind of tried to prove Einstein's theories completely wrong or completely correct. He tried for quantum because Einstein wouldn't accept quantum mm-hmm. theory because he was like, nothing can happen faster than the speed of light. So therefore it's ridiculous. And this guy an Irish guy tried to prove that he was correct and accidentally proved he was incorrect and that quantum physics does exist.
Does sound, do you remember his name? Why does that sound familiar?
He's a pretty famous scientist. I just cannot for the life of me.
Yeah.
I think my news feed just decides what I'm going to be thinking about at any given time. And this week it's about quantum physics and body piercing.
Oh yeah, that's where we start. Oh man, we got from body piercing to quantum physics. I love
this via podcast. Street violence.
Via street violence. Oh boy. So what are you going to do with your kit? I really hope your cats aren't involved.
No, that would be cruel and they can't consent. Jesus. What's wrong with you?
dog humor, the only one worried.
I'm thinking about doing snake bite through my lips mm-hmm. and I want to stretch my ears. And I was going to do the industrial bar across the top, but my wife was like, that's cool if it was 2000 and you were trying to act all cool. And so I think I might not.
It's also the easiest one, one of the easiest ones to like mess up and one of the easiest ones to get injured.
How injured can you get? It's a small little sharp object.
But because it's openings for infection. It's the infections you want to worry about.
I'm thinking fairly clearly I'm going to be wearing gloves and using alcohol sprays, or probably I'll find an alternative to an alcohol spray mm-hmm. because I don't know if I want to put alcohol into a cut in my ear. Although it probably wouldn't bother me that much. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, do you fall in the high pain tolerance category?
As I often say, I am a hyposensitive. I don't really have a lot of sensitivities.
Like,
as in, today I covered something in, I was working on something in repairing a light fixture, and after I was done, I looked up at the light fixture I was working on. I was covered in little bits of blood. I was like, what? I was like, oh, I slipped my hand. Like, again, razor sharp things, you do not feel them.
Yep.
So sometimes, like, another one had nicked my hand and just bled. And I was like, oh. So, yeah, I don't really, like... Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, I'm sensitive to heat, though. The slightest burn, really, I find them extremely painful. But, like, cuts and bruises and stuff, and doesn't really. But burns, they annoy me a lot.
I'm so weird. I love blisters and burns just because I like draining them.
Fun. Seriously. To admit.
But yeah, the lip, it's really the outside edge that has most of the nerve endings, and then you won't even notice like going through
once it's good. Yeah.
The inside, it's like pudding.
Nah, it'll all be good. Other fun things I've been thinking about. I don't know if it makes the news, but there's a big thing with our government's trying to pass legislation to send us all back to work. There's like our union back to work.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear about that.
They basically incited a clause that suspended our constitutional rights so they could do it. And obviously, one of the parties, 18 members of them, got kicked out of the House of Commons.
Patriot Act, you guys.
It's like the whole thing's just like mad. And I'm like, oh, we just wanted to get a slight pay raise, like, because we're underpaid. That's all. No big deal. Like, and all we wanted was like kind of not much more than inflation and like making up for a few years where we've had a pay freeze. Nothing crazy. But apparently this has to go into a crazy thing. But so that has been on my mind a bit. But I had the nicest thing, and I kind of have to share this. I'm pretty pleased with how me and my wife are doing raising my son. We were talking to him about the schools being closed possibly on Friday or whatever, and he was like, oh, sweet, yeah, I can't wait to go. And we're like, okay, just be careful who you're like being really happy around, because for a lot of people, this is a very serious matter. They, people are probably very stressed and very worried about their financial situation and stuff. And I was trying to explain to him, so just like, it's a serious matter. So don't be jumping around going, yay, like in front of people who are, and I was trying to explain that to him. And he was like, oh, okay. And then he went off and got his money from upstairs from his little wallet. And he came down and he goes, I want to support us during this. And I was like, oh my God. So my son is actually a good person by default, which is his name. And I was like, I was so proud of him. So I think me and my wife are doing an okay job.
Yeah.
But he was like, oh, I didn't realize people, I'd like to help. And I'm glad, I'm happy he's a good person.
I also love how you like distinguished, like, you didn't tell him like he was bad for being excited. You didn't tell him not to be excited. You just gave him more context of like, oh, this is serious for others, so you maybe don't want to do that in front of them. Like,
yeah.
I wish that's how I was instructed.
As opposed to that, you're wrong, you're terrible, the way you do things is incorrect. And that's one thing that we try not to do to my son. We're like, yes, you need to do this, but you also have to live in a world with other people who might be the opposite of you, and you have to try and come to a compromise. And that's what we're all about. Like, that's the whole thing. When we go to restaurants, you have to behave in a certain way because you're at someone else's restaurant and this is the way they like to run their business. And we can either not go there. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You don't have to go there. But if you want to go there, you have to behave in these ways or mm-hmm. do this.
Yeah.
And so it's not
like you're a bad person if this or a good person if that. You're just like, here's the rules.
These people do this thing in this way. If you want to go to their thing, you have to do things their way. Like, mm-hmm. but, and like, it's why you're allowed to stand and walk around when you're eating at home. And it's, and like, we'll like sometimes have other family members over and they'll be more trying to correct him about his manners and stuff. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Leave him alone. It's his home, not yours.
Yeah.
He will behave as he sees fit. And like, he knows how to go to a restaurant and eat with manners. He just doesn't have to do it at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's not what he likes pacing. He's very much like, my wife is often like, oh my God, can you two stop pacing? The pair of you walking up and down in the room. We both have a similarity in that way. Yeah.
It's a good stint.
My poor wife. It really is a great one. I like it. Pacing. It's one of the best. It's the ones you can pretend to be really normal doing.
that's a good point. I just realized earlier today I do a lot less stimming, and I especially don't do my more destructive, like I don't have permanent scars inside my cheeks from chewing them. I realized today I haven't been chewing my lips, so I put lipstick on just to be fun because I could. And my hands look amazing because I haven't been chewing around my fingers until they bleed. And also I've stopped twirling my hair so much. I just do healthier things like dance or pace or go for a walk or whatever, but I'm not like eating myself alive anymore.
Wow. Good for you. For me, stimming was something I did when I was a child, but then I stopped doing. And now mine are all the very more socially acceptable ones. Like I write lists to stim. I pace. Mm-hmm. I used to wring my hands, but I've stopped doing that. I don't even know when I stopped doing it. I just did at some point.
Yeah, because at some point
I used to smoke cigarettes.
One anymore. I used to smoke cigarettes.
I smoked 20 a day for like 20 something years.
Holy cats.
Indeed. I gave up when I gave up alcohol, maybe 5 years ago. I can't even remember, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever. And I thought like that was a weird one that I realized that was partially a stimming thing because it was you go outside, you do something, you take yourself away. Oh, it's absolutely a repetitive task with ritual involved. And also they're really annoyingly addictive.
Yep.
But again, it's a matter of deciding it's what you want and somehow figuring out how to stick to that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did it. It's fine. I don't know how you do it. I'm no person to advise people.
Quitting, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me like a fair few attempts and a few years of trying before it just finally stuck.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was getting at with the other letting go of stims, of just like it has to be its time. Like sometimes there's things you can't force or you can't fully force. Like they have to be kind of ready and then you apply it. Nobody just easily quits cigarettes, but there finally came a time where like part of me was already up for it. And then I just had to apply a little bit of force and I went cold turkey.
Yes.
After multiple times of trying to like wean off them and journal about it and all these plans, and which was just creative ways of trying to force it, which was more just torturing myself along the way.
I think for me, the one that really kind of helped a lot was realizing that like I wanted to be around for a lot longer, because once I had a child, it was like, oh, maybe I want to be able to play soccer when he's 10. And not fall over wheezing.
I was wondering, I did the mental math and I was like, yeah, you would have had like a toddler or something around that time, right?
And I realized, and I would go outside and have a smoke and then I'd come back in and he might be crying and I'm like, ugh, I can't go to him right now because the smoke's still in my clothes. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to get my, and I was like, none of this is good. So, and then same reason would like, you have a beer or two on a Friday night, no big deal. But I realized part of that was like, then you have to get up on Saturday morning and you don't quite feel like it. And small toddlers don't care that you've had a few beers the night. They want you out to play football or do whatever it is, run around in the park. And you're like, oh my God, I feel so terrible. Like even with not even a huge amount of alcohol, just a couple of beers or whatever. And then you're really groggy the next day and you're grumpy. And I was like, that's not fair on my child for his childhood. So again, another thing, like you say, when you're just ready, things you decide to do it and you kind of work. So hence I gave up cigarettes and alcohol at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fun time.
Yeah.
But now I'm into body piercing, which is much healthier.
But sober. Adult, well researched.
More California sober.
Yeah. Emotionally sober. you're not doing it to despite your parents or something.
Yes, that kind of, that's, yeah, just I don't even actually think I was never one of those people who actually had that teenage despite my parents thing.
I need I was to like, rebel. I was, yeah, just, I never scared had that of them, so I followed the rules until I could get out of the house.
Yeah, I don't think Ireland is really known for being a particularly
warm,
like strict place. I think everyone did stuff like drinking when they were young and smoked cigarettes and I don't know. I think it was the past as well before we really were like 100% convinced the cigarette things were really bad for you.
I only smoked for like three and a half years, and I started smoking when my ex and I started talking about getting a divorce. We'd only been married less than a year. I think it was just like so stressful. I needed to add a coping mechanism to my coping mechanisms, and I didn't have a good personal practice for like processing emotional things at all. I just used tobacco instead. And then I went into another relationship, learned all of the same relationship problems again, made a new commitment, learned actual healthy coping mechanisms, healthy processing strategies and things, and then was finally in a place where I could let go of nicotine, which was still... My friends have joked over the years that I have like a non-addictive personality, that I could like try anything and I can like give it up if I need to, or I can like quit a habit if I need to for the most part. And
the concept of addictive personality is ridiculous.
It is.
There's no one has an addictive. You have the need for a crutch.
Yeah.
And you create bad support methods that aren't actually healthy. And all you need to do is rewire and the point is, a lot of people say it's probably, they mean you can change and you're willing to change. And that's really what they mean by a non-addictive personality. Their lack of willingness to rethink things and adapt and change. And I was very like that for a very long time. And I think that's why there's so many people who drink and smoke and do all these things, because we don't do a super great in this world, we don't do great education for young people on how to emotionally and process and deal with things. And hence, yeah, I think everyone should have a therapist.
Mm.
Because like, you don't have to be mentally ill particularly or anything. Like, you just, it's like a great way of teaching yourself to process things and be more I think that's the thing, everyone associates therapists with mental illness in the movie sense of it, as opposed to, it can just help you learn to process things better and react better in the moment and set good boundaries and how to have conversations about your boundaries and what is acceptable and what's reasonable to expect. A lot of that is what goes on in therapy. Be a healthy,
well-rounded, expressed person.
No one should do that. We should all go back to being awful, secretively hating each other and then being mean on a weird sort of level that I don't understand. It's much better that way.
I do, to go back a couple steps, I do really like the reframe of like maybe what they were saying is that I'm good at change, because that is a thing I've thought about that feels like a strength, obviously, but it definitely comes from, I guess, things that were traumatic, which was just like, I think because I moved a lot, especially as a young child. So all of the routines, all of the relationships, you know, get ripped away and changed into different things. And I just had to adapt to that. But I think later in life, like even if something was a deep pattern that I'm used to doing, I'm like, well, it's not going to be healthy long term or whatever. And I was,
it's not suitable here.
You know, I'm able to move across the country or change my career or whatever, things that like scare the shit out of other people. And then when I get to talking to them, I'm like, oh, you lived in like the same house until you went to college. Oh, you've had the same job since you graduated college. Like, you're, no wonder you're like terrified of any little pivot. Like, you're not used to it. You haven't worked that muscle. Like, you got to start smaller or something.
I don't know. I grew up in the same family home for the first like whatever, 18, 20 years of my life, whatever it was. Something like 18. And I too have no problem with change. Like, I upped and moved to Canada. I've traveled a lot. I love change. It's actually one of those things that keeps me going. I find it interesting. I get very bored. And I'm wondering, because there seems to be for a lot of autistic people a really, really hard time with changing plans. Like all that idea, like for them moving things around in their house, like changing their furniture around can upset them. Whereas I was never bothered by change. I love airports. Like all the things that people always say that autistics hate, I seem to love. Like airports, they're crowded and busy and crazy. I'm like, yeah, but their change and their travel and their experiences.
Okay, I want to pause because I'm really curious here. So, because like... You also said that, like, you know, you didn't seek out a diagnosis until you were, like, experiencing more than normal, like, anxiety in your, like, late 30s, early 40s.
I was 41, I think it was. Yeah, yeah, right. Early 40s. But I've always had anxiety.
Okay.
Just never thought to do anything about it.
I guess the thing I'm wondering is, like, how much... Like, did you have a lot of space for healthy expression and autonomy as a child that maybe... there was less pent-up trauma in the area, the kind of trauma that would lead to traits such as like really needing to control your schedule and your environment, which I very much was one of those people. I know if you moved my pen or my chair, I would break down if a meeting got changed or something. And like, these are things I've been able to change in myself with what I've called like healing my nervous system is an easy way to say it or whatever. But so I'm just curious, you could just be fundamentally different. Or I wonder if there's an experiential thing where you had like less, you know, little bits of trauma built up. So they didn't become those behaviors. And that's why you don't have them.
I have no idea. Like my childhood was fairly stable. My parents were stable people. There was no more than usual, people who are married together and don't like each other.
Did your parents acknowledge feelings the way like you do with your son?
Oh, God, no.
Okay. So that's still not been any kind of emotional neglect will build up little bits of trauma over time. So I'm just curious.
I wouldn't. Yeah. The thing is, emotional neglect is the problem with that is it implies that the people who were neglectful. And I don't feel my parents were neglectful, but I do feel they were not emotionally trained themselves to be. Like, again, someone like my father, a man who was born in the 1930s, I think 33 or something like that. Like, and then his father and his twin brother, I believe, died years, like when he was young. And he was like an older brother to a lot of other siblings and stuff. So like, again, I think his way of expressing love was to take care of us, like to be a real Irish man of that way. Like you don't talk about your feelings. That's not a done thing. Good God, no. Love and support is shown by financial support or, I don't know, like just providing
loved.
A roof over their head. Sure.
I know it seems like a silly question, but I'm just checking.
Like again, I don't feel that like there's anything that I honestly, my childhood in my opinion was a mixed bag. It was both good and bad. It was never, I think, not being like, I think my parents tried their best and did a fairly good job somehow, but like not
and
necessarily.
It's complicated because I could say the same thing and I came out of my childhood with a lot of trauma.
So did I, but I can't tell if that comes from my schooling, my sibling, one sibling in particular, my parents' failure to do anything about that. There's a million different like factors, and overall the other thing is, for me, I feel that I am fantastic as a person, so I can't pin down what was good about what made parts of me made me good and what parts made me bad, but the combined package is pretty fantastic. So I don't know.
I got us slightly off topic because we were, I don't remember.
We were talking about people's changing and ability to change.
Yes.
And then I was saying to you about the whole, I can't imagine what it must be like for those autistic people who find the slightest change very difficult to deal with, because there's certain things I have planned. If I have a plan in my mind, like today I want to go here, get the groceries done, get this cooked for the soup for the week or whatever it is. And if I don't get those things done, it'll irk me and I'll mull over it in my head. And I can't imagine if that happened for every little change. It would be, it's only specifically if I have a plan of stuff. And if something big changes and I'm like just doing something completely different, it doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. But it's if I just have a plan, but I don't really do it or don't get it done and we're just wasting time and for no, or for stupid little reasons that we don't do the things we're supposed to do, then I get irked. And I cannot imagine that level of intense emotion being applied to almost everything, like someone moving your pen or like just like moving furniture around your house or changing location for your meeting for coffee and they go, oh, I want to go here instead. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine having that level of anxiety about that. And for a lot of autistic people, I imagine that must be very frustrating.
Well, I know it's more than this, but one major component that came to me is like, especially if and when you're living day to day on like limited spoons, limited energy, like if you're not able to like fully rest and or build a lifestyle that works for your energy pattern or whatever, and you're constantly mm-hmm. kind of living, never quite filling up your cup, changes cost extra. And you're like, I don't have a budget for that. So yeah, you were already planning on meeting at Starbucks. And when they said Dunkin' Donuts, now you have to like change how you're getting it and like do these three other things that you don't have spoons for because you're already, you know, running on a very tight budget or something. And like I said, that's not the whole, that doesn't explain the whole thing, but that is a big part of it. Because at least I'm speaking for myself as I've gotten to a place where I have plenty, most days, plenty of spoons to spend. Those kind of things don't bother me anymore.
So I think that's where I am. There's only certain times it gets to me. And like it usually tends to be on very specific things. Like, for example, if I go to work, I usually have no idea what I'm going to be doing all day. But in my mind, I'm going to work at this time and then I'm coming home from work at this time. Mm. And they're the only details that matter. So whatever happens doesn't take any spoons from me, doesn't affect me, doesn't bother me, because I'm just been go here and do something, go there and okay, cool, whatever. That doesn't like, but sometimes I'm wondering if that's when it actually gets to me. Sometimes when I just wanted to get these things done and I just want to, yeah, I can actually relate to that. And maybe that is the thing. I'm just running on because I've set up my life to be reasonably comfortable, that I get enough free time for myself. I get enough things that I need. But when I do get run down, those little changes do affect me more. And I imagine I just don't have the same level of intensity as some other people. Like I know a few other autistic people who I see and really struggle with that change. Any slight change really kind of throws them. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that's extremely difficult if they live near their level all the time. Yeah, most of them would.
Yeah. Just even the skill of being able to ask myself and get an answer of like, where is my energy level at? Can I still do the things I have planned for the rest of the day? This is like such a helpful skill I've cultivated. That I did not have up until the last couple of years. And it's kind of like not having a like gas tank meter on your car and you're kind of guessing if you're going to make it. When's the last time you put gas in? How far was that going to get you? That kind of thing. Just in this moment, I'm really grateful that I don't feel like I run without a gas meter every day anymore.
And for me, the thing is I find it hard to understand because I don't seem to be affected by a lot of things. Like there was the day I was moving to Canada, I basically gave up my apartment, returned the keys to the landlord, blah, 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 and the people I was sharing with and whatever. And I left to go to the airport and I put all my clothes in a bag and I dumped most of my stuff because I was like, well, I don't really need, for some reason, I had loads of DVDs, weirdly enough. I was like, oh, wait, these can just be digital now. Why do these exist in my life? So out to the street to see if anyone wants. Anyway, but so I arrived in the airport in the morning with a bag full of clothes to move to Canada. And I was standing looking at the board to see what time, if my flight was on schedule and all that. And the first one at the very top of the list went cancelled. Then the second one, third one, fourth one, all the way down the board, it went cancelled. And I went, oh, that board must be broken. I'll have to go and look at a different board. Because why would every plane in an airport be cancelled all at once? That would be ridiculous. So I went over to another digital board. This one was digital, not one of the rolling ones. So I figured, oh, it'll have up-to-date information. I was like, no, it does appear every flight out of this place is cancelled. And then I turned on the news and discovered that the volcano in Iceland had erupted filled the sky and so cancelled every flight. So I spent a couple of days hanging around an airport.
What time?
But that to me didn't actually disturb me that much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like, I for some reason have resources for certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, that's fine. Just part of the adventure. No big deal. But as I say, then the weirdest thing, like having a plan to do my groceries very specifically will really upset me.
Well, it's funny you say that.
I don't
too,
know if you noticed.
Because I was mentioning the little things that would really upset me, but also, When I moved to rural Alaska a few years ago and started like living on a boat and living off grid and stuff like that, multiple people commented. They were like impressed at how well I took to a new lifestyle. They would like double check, like, have you done this before or have you? Nope. Oh, I'll poop in the woods and burn my trash on the beach. Like, I don't.
It is what it is.
And I just adapted. Oh, we can't do that because we said we were going to go this way, but the tide's out and the tide works differently, you know, and you got to use the wind and the tide. And like that never bothered me the way other, yeah, I don't know. I'm noticing what where I'm like, I don't fully understand different categories.
Is that more than you get frustrated at what other people are doing rather than the things around you? If there's something that's just uncontrollable, it's uncontrollable. But you get frustrated when things get in your way of doing the thing you want to do, and they tend to be other niggly things or other people's preferences. Like when you get to an airport and all planes are cancelled, mm-hmm. you're like, well, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. All planes are cancelled. Whereas if it's just your plane or you forgot your ticket, that would upset me because I did something that resulted in this, or there is some cause and I can focus on it and get annoyed at it. Whereas if it's just a greater thing like a volcano, you can't really get annoyed at a volcano.
Yeah.
Well, you could, but I don't think it cares.
I don't know. In some way I'm like, oh, maybe that is a part of me trying to protect me. Because it's, you know, it's like if we had remembered our ticket, like we wouldn't, you know, it seems I'm in a bad mood. I don't like this feeling, this frustration or whatever it is. But I try to get under like, why is that happening? Or what does it want me to do instead? And usually underneath all of your drives have like good or neutral intentions. And the things you were listing, like, oh, like, you know, but they're not necessarily like super intelligent or rational. So it could just be the belief of I shouldn't have trusted that person to do that thing, you know, and that's why you're frustrated. Even if maybe it was reasonable to trust them to do that thing and mm-hmm. stuff just falls through. Like you didn't know they were going to get stuck in traffic or, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. So that would really irritate me if someone uses the excuse of I got stuck in traffic. Like, really, did you? The fact that there's traffic every day.
Oh, and you didn't plan for
have-
it.
And you didn't get stuck. You failed to plan. Like, if your train blows up surprisingly, I'll be like, wow, that's a thing you couldn't have planned for. There's nothing we can do about it. But you just being 45 minutes late means you left 45 minutes late and didn't bother to Like, you didn't bother to adjust for all the things that are happening, and you didn't, like, and yeah, and that kind of stuff. Well, and it's the same thing with the little changes of plans. You want to go from Starbucks to Dunkin' Donuts, but I had an idea in my head of what we were doing and what I wanted to do, and now you're just arbitrarily making this, mm-hmm. us go to that horrible, like, less, I don't know, like, just, yeah, like, bizarre.
Oh, that's so, so that's just well, a me I'm thing, like, then. Is it this part of me, and you can agree or disagree, but for me, I'm like, oh, you know, it has like an ideal, or it's like, in an ideal world, you could have accounted for that traffic. In an ideal world, you would have decided where we're going yesterday, or, and so I get to be mad at it because I have some fantasy where it could have gone better. Even though all of that is still, I'm still distracted from the present of like, what's actually happening? What, how do I just account for what's true? I'm always trying to like get back to.
Yes. And I do agree with you. And I find that with like crazy things that just happen, I can just go, well, there was nothing like there was no planning for this. There's no ideal for this. This mm-hmm. is just something that is. And we're now adapting to and dealing with it right now. And it's the same thing with planes and going to airports and stuff and crowds. You're like, it's just, it is what it is. But it's very, yes, if someone decides to do something that is easily avoidable, or in my opinion, whether it is or not is another matter. Like,
yeah, in your opinion, I once went in your head.
I once went on a second date with a girl, and we arranged to meet somewhere, and I got there and it was about 10 minutes after the time went, and I was like, okay, well then I'm leaving. And so I left. And that was like, I never spoke to the person again. And eventually she texted me about an hour later saying, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I was in the cinema. And I was looking at this text going, well, that's not good enough. You arranged to meet me and use my
doors. Like, did they lock you in?
It was like the worst excuse, and just made the whole thing slightly more irritating.
Yeah, I was like, I would be kind of insulted.
Well, to the point where I don't do that. Like, if you do, if that's you, I think she was trying to be all cool and aloof or something. Mm. You know, some people, and I was like, no,
she
I don't.
Guaranteed a last date.
Yeah. I'm like, nothing personal. I just stopped. I don't do that. Yeah. Like, that's just, I don't waste other people's time. I don't want my time wasted. Bizarre. Like, and that kind of thing, I'm like, wow. And maybe that was partial modism, but I was like, nope, totally unacceptable to do that to me.
At first, I thought this story was going to be about you leaving only after 10 minutes, which I guess is reasonable the more I think about it. But then the story went down a completely different road.
In today's day and age, if you've waited for 10 minutes and someone hasn't texted you with a reasonable excuse, then it is perfectly acceptable to...
That's true.
Leave.
That's true.
There was, I heard the weirdest thing on the radio, and the reason that came into my head was there was someone talking about some woman walked out on a first date, or some French guy complained about a woman on TikTok or something, and he was going on about how right he was to leave on just walk out on a first date in the middle of the date. And the people on the radio were like, what a dick, da 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 da. And they were like, oh, have you ever walked out on a date? And I was like, yes, I have, because I realized I've actually done that. And then I was like, they were like, what possible excuse could anyone have for doing that?
Self-respect.
And I was, my one was really weird. I went on this date with a girl, and she did that thing where if you're a white male, everyone kind of assumes you're a racist. And especially if they are a racist themselves, they assume you will agree with all these sort of snide comments about other groups and ethnicity, and like,
oh no, and this is still worse than I imagined.
So this girl was basically a giant racist, and I was like, oh, I don't even have the effort to tell you you're a racist. So I said, I'm just going to the toilet, and then put on my coat, my gloves, and walked out the door. After I left, my friend, I was telling my friend, he was like, so while you were saying I'm just going to the toilet, you were putting on a coat and gloves. And I'm like, yeah, it wasn't the best excuse I've ever given. And he was like, I think she might have guessed what was happening. But my friend was proud of me because I'd left the bill for her to deal with.
I didn't even think about that.
Which, as a racist, I think you should get.
I was going to say, yeah, pretty quick karma in that instance.
Yeah, I was just like, are you kidding me? And, like, it shocks me how often as a white male you get certain comments that kind of assume you have a mild level and that you will... It's like religious people who say, bless you. They kind of assume that they're right and that everyone agrees with them that God is great. Mm-hmm. And they'll say stuff like, praise the Lord. And you're like, no, that's a traffic light. That's what told us to cross safely, not God. Like, but they always give you this assumption, oh, praise the Lord, we made it home safely. Mm-hmm. I'm like, or traffic lights and traffic laws and all these other things that people invented. We could praise them as well. And so I get that a lot as a white male to the assumption, same sort of thing, like, oh, you will agree with me on these things by default. And I'm like, no, I genuinely won't.
Oh, yeah. I'm at the... Well, okay. No, I was going to make a stronger statement. I do still have to hold my tongue in certain situations, if depending on when things get complicated. But now more than ever, if I can be like, no, actually, I will say the no, actually.
Yes. And the thing is, I think it's not just like it. That's not just a me thing. I think in general, our society is becoming less, well, especially here in Canada, it's more polarized, but I think more people are speaking out against these things now. Mm-hmm. It was like when I grew up, everyone drank and drove when I was young. Oh. It was just normal. But by the time me and my friend's generation came about, if someone took out a set of keys after we'd had a few drinks, someone would have went, dude, where are you going?
Yep.
And they would have been like, oh, I'm just going to head home. And they're like, you got the car with you? And they'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, well, you can't. And they just like, they would say, no, that's not accepted. Mm-hmm. Like, and it would come down to that whole thing of like, no, you can't take other people's lives in your hands just because you want to have a drink and drive. You leave your car here and you go home. And that sort of was the more accepted way to speak. And no one saw the person who was speaking up as being in the wrong anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas 20 years earlier, if you were the person who had spoken up, everyone would have been like, geez, what a killjoy, always moaning about something. Like, whereas I think culturally we had moved on to a more progressive, a little bit more progressive.
That's such a good example. Yeah. Because I was also thinking, like one thing I like to point out a lot is even as a kid, my dad like pointed out different ways advertising could manipulate you. So he's kind of like, don't fall for this thing, don't fall for that. When they're doing a comparison on a commercial, if they don't name the other brand, he's like, then they haven't proven it and it's probably a lie, you know, and stuff like that. And in little ways, so I've had a lens of like, oh, how things are trying to be manipulative instead of just being direct. And I haven't really spoken on it most of my life. I've just been like the quiet autistic kid noticing it. And then, yeah, I think this like newest generation, like everything is so manipulative rather than being direct now that this new generation is just like calling bullshit on all of it. Like they're not even buying into it like we kind of tentatively did. And I love that.
I tried to do what your dad did with my son. Explain to him why. Mm. I'm like, yes, that toy looks great, but be aware that the guy is trying to make money and trying to profit off you. And it might not be as cool as they're making it out to be in the ad. And like, remember, and like, it's funny because he will now occasionally say things. He'd be like, oh, I think they're trying to. I'm like, you're getting it.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for having that pointed out. Really young, especially because I was really gullible in other ways, but that lesson like had a lot of really helpful downstream effects for me.
And just think about it. They reckon now by the time, well, this was a couple of years ago, by the time you're 18, you'll have seen a billion advertisements.
Holy cats. That was one thing I repeated over and over in Southeast. I was like, not only do I love not like hearing traffic or construction, aside from maybe my neighbor's generator or something occasionally, there are no billboards. There's no stores to walk into for one thing, but there's nowhere to walk into and you hear ads on the radio. You know, like
that was one of my favorite parts about living off grid is but not being bombarded with advertising.
I bet when you looked out over like a grove of trees, you went, wouldn't a billboard right in the middle of that just be perfect?
You know what's missing?
What this needs is some houses that look exactly the same as all the other houses and a billboard.
Yeah. Whereas, I especially in high school and college grew up in the Midwest in Indiana. My parents are still there. And I have other family in other parts of the Midwest. And you just take highways. You just take the cement highway. And to get to my grandmother's house from where we lived in Indiana, there was a stretch of highway that had literally 17, I won't say the guy's name, but his like trailer RV company, like 17 in a row in like less than 10 miles or something. It was ridiculous. Wow.
Well, and the thing is, we can all say it, but advertising works. There's a reason all this money is spent.
That's
on
what
it.
I was thinking. I was like, there's a reason year after year he pays for all of these. Like it must
sell RVs.
It must actually work on people instead of just pissing you off that he ruined all of this view.
Well, the other thing is, I presume the difference between you and them is those people driving down those roads considered RVs an important piece of information because maybe they lived in a trailer home or they knew people who lived in it.
They're on the highway.
And they're maybe going to looking for a house or somewhere to live. To me, I would always preference to see nature, but then again, I'll have a house to live in. If I didn't have a house to live in, would I rather find out a better place to live? Or and again, if advertisement was just what it was originally sort of set out to be, a way to inform people about things, it would be fine.
I come back to a lot. Like finding old magazines where it's like a nice image
Tom
of the product.
Roper.
A nice image of the product and like a description of what it is and or how it's made and what it's for. Like it's just straightforward advertising. And now half the time you don't even know what is being advertised at you. And I'm like, fuck
yes,
you,
they're
I'm
selling
not
looking
a, that up.
But they're selling a lot of the time now, they're selling a lifestyle rather than
I call that manipulation.
The actual product. Oh, absolutely.
Tell me
because,
I'm selling a lifestyle.
But like, again, it's that whole thing. I usually, and I've read stuff that say autistic people are less affected by advertisement a lot of the time because of their critical thinking skills. And because of their nature of questioning what's being told to them, that they say they're less, they've done experiments and proven that they're less effective on autistic people.
Well, I wonder if that's, it could be. I wonder if that's inherent to the autistic person or if it's, the same way like Audis can chat with each other, but they don't communicate well with neurotypicals and vice versa. I wonder if like it's neurotypical advertising aimed at neurotypical people.
Typical interests.
And it just goes right over our heads or something. Like, yeah, I mean,
could
like,
be,
I'm
or
not
it
excited.
Could be a lack of interest.
I'm not excited to go to the party that your beer commercial is advertising. Like, I don't like...
So the one the one that got me and it took me a while to figure it out was I pride myself on not really being taken in much by advertisement, but I really like to do outdoor stuff like hiking and camping and all that stuff. And for some reason, Jeep had me sold on wanting a Jeep because all their ads are like this guy driving up a mountain and then going hiking and kayaking and doing all these exciting. And they're basically selling you that somehow you'll have more time and you'll be more likely to do these activities that you love to do.
Just by buying this
car. And I nearly fell for it. So I actually went into a dealership and I started asking questions about a Jeep Wrangler or something. And he was telling me stuff about it. And I was like, so like, is this paint any good if it gets like, is it easily repaired or do anything if you like scratch it on it, like if you're driving it? And he's like, well, no, you would have to get the thing resprayed and it would cost like so many $1,000s. I'm like, so it's not really
practical question.
And the guy was like, well, it's not really for like off-roading. And I'm like, what do you mean it's not like it's a Wrangler? Like that. And he's like, well, that there is a type that people use for that, but like they're the older ones. These are more of a, like a nicer city one. And I was like, so. And like, I eventually just left confused. And I actually asked a mechanic, and he was like, oh no, they're just terrible cars. Don't buy one anyway. But I was like, okay, cool. I got confused by their advertising. Oh. But they sold me a lifestyle because what they sold me were the things I actually liked. Mm-hmm. And I accidentally nearly bought a car. Because I like other things that have nothing to do with this type. Like, I would have been much better off getting
before you just impulsively bought the car.
But the thing is, I think that's mad. People can impulsively spend $50,000-$60,000. It's like, yeah. I'm not a poor man, but I still would never spend or without asking a few questions about the paint. Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, that was another layer of the earlier point of the whole like neurotypes communicate best with each other and less well with different mm-hmm. types. Asking. Oh, I just lost it.
That's fine.
I just lost it.
The other one, there was another advertisement one I was thinking of that was really relevant that I can't. Now I've lost it.
This is why the three host model is perfect.
Come on, Robert.
But yeah, Robert is doing the smart thing and resting, so,
yep.
So that he's not.
We all need to do. That's always a good thing. So yes, that's. Have you any other interesting things to discuss?
I'm so spending lots of money. Maybe it's easier. Like if I try to put myself, you're like, how can someone, you know, not ask questions and spend $40,000-$50,000? And it's like, well, maybe when you haven't had to question lots of things because in your culture, because it just works for you, you make more assumptions. The car will just do what I want it to, or, you know, there's like, I think maybe there's less questioning in general because you haven't like bumped up against much. To make you
and there was okay, so it's more or less that same thing again about exercising the muscle and us having a more exercised yeah. brain in that particular facet of questioning everything
because we were given an obstacle course versus just like a flat path.
Yeah,
and so
true.
On the one hand, you're like, oh, I might have to go through these obstacles, but then at the other end, you have all of these skills from having done the obstacles. Yeah,
that makes sense. It explains why we're all so brilliant.
Thank you. I keep meeting us and I keep thinking like that person's really cool. The next autistic person I meet is really cool.
And that's the funniest thing. Like I keep meeting different autistic people and they're very cool in their own
way.
Very
different. Yes. Yeah.
And I love that. It's like meeting. I find that like a lot of neurotypical people are carbon copies of each other mm-hmm. and they're very lacking in, thought. Like even if I meet autistics who have interests that have nothing to do with mine, their passion about their interests really draws me in.
Literally
I think if I met the right autistic person, he could explain to me why Tiddlywinks the game is the greatest thing ever and I'd probably believe him by the end of it, like because they're passionate about certain things. You're like, oh yeah, totally, we should do that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wait a sec, I don't want to do that. But yeah. And like it's fantastic to meet such different minds that like a different approach to the way of seeing the world and being able to talk about it openly. And like it's one of the pleasurable things about associating with and talking to many different autistic people, which I realize now is pretty much what I've limited most of the people I talk to now.
I get that a lot when people start really finding autistic community after a while, they're like, my social circle is now really mostly neurodivergent people.
Well, because to be honest, why wouldn't?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why would you spend time discussing the weather with.
That's what I was going to, another. Yeah. You said, you know, we could listen to any autistic person's passion. And yeah, we talk about like things we do or things we've learned. Or situations, stuff like that. Whereas I don't just like to talk about people.
Or the same repeated patterns.
Yeah. So-and-so's pregnant. So-and-so got this job. So-and-so. And especially mm-hmm. if I'm not close to and I don't really know that person. Like, if my best friend is pregnant or gets a promotion or something, yes, I want to have that conversation. But if my friend's friend's neighbor or something, I don't care.
It was like my mother used to tell us stories. And she'd always start off a story going, "And do you remember this person?" And I'd always be like, "No, no." And one day my brother just tapped me, took me aside and he goes, "Just say yes. It makes the story go quicker."
Oh, because she'll try to jog your memory of how you know the person.
Oh, and explain to you, who do you remember this person? Because if you remember them, you'll remember that person. God, no. And it'll go like, and you don't remember them, but do you remember their cousin Mary? Because you might remember her from, oh man, why did I not just say yes? And so then when my mother would tell me a story about someone, I'd just go, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, them. Yeah, yeah. I remember them. And then they tell me about someone who got pregnant. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. Thinking in my head, it's not.
I can't stand this.
No one cares. And I think it's lovely that neurotypical people like care about that sort of stuff. It's really nice for them.
Yeah.
It's just not something I have any interest in.
I promote diversity. Diversity of people, diversity of things you talk about. You should talk about the things you want to talk about with other people who want to talk about them.
And don't assume, because I don't want to talk about them or don't say anything, that I'm rude.
Yeah.
You're forcing this terrible conversation on me and I'm the person who's been rude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I feel sorry for them. We should come up with some sort of model to level them about how bad they are at their needs and stuff.
Like 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, something like that. This person really needs to talk about people you've never heard of. They're level 3. You've never heard of these people and you care not at all about them, but they have to tell you about them.
Oh boy. Oh wait, this is kind of off topic, but so wait, you've seen Dairy Girls then, right?
Yes.
I never know any characters' names, but so
nor do I.
Okay, good. But so the character who sort of like drones on in stories, nobody enjoys talking to them, or kind of that's like the ongoing gag. I'm like, that person's neurodivergent, right? That's, or is this just like an Irish stereotype? I don't know.
I never thought of it. It is an Irish stereotype. There's always a person. And I think that's who I was talking about with my mother, was one of those people who just kind of tells you stories that, like, as someone described it as, they'll tell you about how they drove down the road and then they went into the shop and then they got there and they got a bag of tea and some cookies for later. And then they thought about getting a sandwich for lunch in the afternoon because they might be hungry. And then they drove to here and then they went over to... And then I went into my mother's house and I found her like they found the dog dead in the living room, having been stabbed 57 times. And you're like, you led with the tea bag bit. Why didn't you go with the dog being stabbed? Like, that was the part that draws people in, like the important. And so, yes, there, you always get people like that. I presume you've met a few of them in your life. Everyone's met them. There's this drone
that feels,
stories
that
go
feels
nowhere.
Neurodivergent to me.
See, that weird. That feels neurotypical to me. Oh. That they're going on about stuff, and
well,
like
it's,
none
it's
of it's
the
important.
Other side of the bell curve, you know.
Maybe
like the way others, like you're so honed in to what's salient. You're like, I'm going to just tell you.
Yeah, like
dog.
The dog being stabbed loads of times. That's
other side of the bell curve. You have someone who like has, because I've talked to folks like this, who like they can see the whole like story and day that they want to tell you, but like forming it into the actual narrative is really difficult. And so they're telling you the next thing that triggers the next thing because they're trying to get to the dog, but they don't know how to just like jump to the dog.
That's important. Is this a lot like that thing that everyone keeps talking about, the weavers and the concluders?
Oh, I have a weaver. That sounds familiar.
It's from an article that someone wrote a while back.
No, I feel like my friends in my group chat with my two other friends, I feel like they were saying that's why our chat goes forever, because we're just weavers who never...
Yeah, I think definitely Robert and I would say, I presume would be yourself would be a weaver as well. I think maybe I'm more of a concluder. Like I'm very much like stop with the superfluous information and just get to the point. And also for me, my conversations are argumentative to try and reach a point, a final, like.
Do you info dump? Like, do you ever get to a place where you're finding it hard to stop talking, or like, you know, the next point and you like need to make that point?
Well, my wife occasionally has said to me, okay, I can't listen anymore. I'm sorry. You need to stop. So I think I might. The odd time, it's hard to tell. I can usually tell when she's like, I just can't, please stop.
And when she says that, even if you have one more thing lined up, is it easy to like stop? Or are you like,
I don't stop. I just. Oh, eventually she walks out of the room and that's that song. No, I do try and stop, but yes, when I get into it, and she goes, I tend to also repeat the same thing to try and get the message across. She's like, I heard you the first five times. So apparently, yes, I do. I don't consider it info dumping. I think I'm explaining the world to everyone and helping them out. But sometimes my wife points out that it can be a bit much. But she does it in a nice way.
Yeah. Well, and having, I don't know about you, but yeah, having been on both sides, I get that there's not a super easy thing that looks really kind to do.
Stop.
Yeah. I was very clear with my partner of like, you can just tell me, like, cut me off. You can wave your hands. You can say words. Like, it won't hurt my feelings. I'm aware that I do it and I have a hard time because I feel like sometimes I can even read the other person's body language, and some part of me knows that they're not enjoying me talking anymore. I'll also talking notice at them. That I'm repeating myself, and I haven't been able to get to the point I want to get to. And while all of this meta thought is happening, I'm still talking, and I like can't
rambling.
I can't stop the like whirlpool. That's what it is. I'm like, someone just suck me under so I can stop talking.
100%. And I think my wife found that the best thing about my diagnosis, because she learned she could be less.
She could just be more
subtle blunt. About it. She could just be like, you're doing it. Like, I've listened to it for a bit, but that's what I can take.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, okay, fair enough. Like, and so I think that was one of the benefits for her from me getting diagnosed. She could like just take it as.
Yeah.
Something that he does and sometimes doesn't notice he's doing or whatever. So she could be less subtle about it. And
you can have new scripts with each other.
Yes. And then I found it actually, it helped her and it helped me as well, because I kind of now look at when she says it, I'm like, yeah, I can see how that would get annoying. Fair enough. And then I can sometimes say, fine, I'll just call someone else to tell about it.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing too, is if I can feel like, oh, I still really want to talk about this thing, but not with this person, and I can just redirect the energy, I can one, stop talking that person's face off, and then two, I don't have to feel, because there used to be shame around it. Like, and why can't you get to the thing, point faster? I want to be more concise.
I think my problem is that I'm too concise. Too much detail, too much explanation around, and repeating it because I'm not sure they got it. And sometimes my wife's like I'm not an idiot. I understood you the first five times. It's now just getting annoying. And I'm like, oh, okay, fair enough. So,
but
my wife's never mean about it. Like, it's just, she'll be like, okay, that's, I've listened now and I've
it
taken in
like
the information.
She has healthy boundaries.
Yeah. It's great.
Oh, no, I recommend people look for that in a partner.
Because, yeah, I'm sure if the other option is she doesn't say anything to me and she keeps it inside and resents me until we're divorced in a couple of years. I'd rather have her say, okay, I can't deal with this anymore right now, please stop, than say to me in 10 years' time, yeah, we're getting divorced. And I'd be like, what? Why? Healthy boundaries.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest thing I saw like in my early, you know, late teens, early 20s relationships, of the ways resentment would build and how I was actually noticing it the whole time, but I didn't know what I was noticing until the explosion at the end. And so then I have just become more blunt and direct in certain areas of like, I have this behavior. I need to know if you like this or not, because this thing I'm willing to change, but you have to be open with me. These things I'm not willing to, like, I've just put it all out on the table, and now I have the best relationship. So big recommend.
Absolutely. And to be honest, that is for when people often ask, is it worth getting a diagnosis?
For negotiating relationships, it's
relationships actually the and for them biggest, to to give you both vocabulary and a greater understanding of what's going on and what people mean by what they're doing and their actions and how to interpret them, and it sets the playing field with that, like, your way of doing things is not always by default correct. Like, we both do different things equally. They're both equally correct or equally wrong, whatever way you want to look at it. And we have to, if we want to have a healthy continuing relationship, we both have to compromise.
Different and valid.
And some of them I just won't be able to compromise on. It's just not something I'm possibly, and if it's a deal breaker for you, then this isn't going to be something that's going to work for either of us.
Yeah, let's not.
Because I can't change. I, no matter how much I want to, I can pretend to change, but I can't actually change. And if you can't deal with it, then maybe we need to separate ways. But usually if we try and discuss it openly and stuff. Sorry, my cat distracted me.
But yeah, the other big thing for folks getting diagnoses that they've reported to me. Oh my God, don't lose this, Tango. Where's my brain today? Dialogue, not taking things personally. Things that each partner might have, like, behaviors, whether it's the neurodivergent or the neurotypical, like, either partner might have been taking personally, that they're like, oh, it's actually like this kind of trait, and now I see what you're doing here. Or like, you're not ignoring me, you have a special interest, or you're not talking over me, you info dump, and now we can address it. Like, instead of me sitting here taking it personally, feeling bad about it and not talking about it, like you were saying, now we have like talking points. We can use these terms and we can negotiate with each other and like have a better relationship.
So an example of that would be, I think I info dump a lot with people and the way I talk is very direct. And I believe a number of women believed in the past that I was mansplaining things to them. And I was like, no, I'm just like that with everyone, men and women. I explain this way with a condescending tone to everybody. It's fine.
Yeah, I can see that.
And at least it's not personal then for them, or at least it's not sexist, or it's just annoying in its own right, but without the sexism, which is nice.
Yeah. Or like, I had friends, I'm trying to remember the other, they were both doing it, but they like didn't understand each other's sense of humor. Like, one was trying to tease affectionately and the other one was taking the teasing personally, like they needed to change. And once there was a diagnosis involved, like they were like, we're saying the same things to each other, because like there's still the teasing, but it feels totally different because now we know what's going on and we can actually have fun with it. So it's weird. It's like, on the surface, it doesn't look like anything's changed, but it feels like it's totally changed. And I was like, that's beautiful.
And that is where I come down on that question always about people saying, is it worth getting diagnosed? If you have the resources and it's not going to cost you that much in your life, then it is definitely, if it's like, if it was a more of a will I, won't I, meh, whatever I feel, I would say definitely do it. Now, if it's going to be put you into a lot of financial strife or whatever, then it's just as valid to self-diagnose. But having a diagnosis, I suppose, the thing is, I never had the opportunity to self-diagnose. Maybe if I had, I'd still have the same relationship with my wife and people, because I'd be like, I am autistic and that's the way it is. And maybe I'd have the same relationship. But for me, the diagnosis gave me all this information and this vocabulary and even a new way of looking at I would say I had come to the point where I was very happy with who I was, and I was fairly certain that my way of doing things was just as valid as everyone else's, but that I was this weird person who'd like to do things contrary to everyone else. And I was like, I always thought that of myself. I'm like, why do I always have to kind of like the thing the opposite way, or like always have to argue with everyone about everything? Like, because, but now I realize that's the way my brain's wired. I don't just let people talk indefinitely and not ask a question or read between the lines. Like, I don't read an article like that woman's thing about her her burden that she was taking care of her profoundly autistic child without questioning where she's coming from and what other motive. And like, other people are like, wow, that's a really hard way to look at that poor woman writing about what needs to happen for her child. I'm like, or is it? And like, for me, that's the autism, that there's just no way I can control the way, I can't give people the benefit of the doubt in that way.
Is that part of that metacognition too, that we just like can't really turn off, like always processing extra layers?
But there has to be, like, and the thing is, whether they, and a lot of the time I find that they do it, but don't process it. I bet you if you said to her there was an element of that, she would freak out and say, how dare you say that to me, and be really angry. But it was there, whether she knows it or not, it was most definitely there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so I was always getting in arguments with people by saying these kind of things. They'd get upset and offended. And I had gotten to the point where I was like, well, I'm still right. But it's much nicer to know now there's a reason why I have to say it, as opposed to what other people I assumed were doing was thinking it and keeping it to themselves. Mm. But apparently they just weren't thinking it.
I don't know exactly when, but I had that like big aha moment at some point in my 20s where I was just like, these things will work out because people will notice, you know, A, B, and C. And then I went off grid and came back to like online life a few years later. And I was like, they did not notice. They did not see. It has degraded.
Yeah. Again, it's the whole thing where like I've been called a communist and stuff by aunts and uncles at family dinners and stuff. That was one of my proudest ones when I actually got called a communist. I was like, thank you, because you're a right-wing bigot.
I was going to say, like, who calls people communists anymore anyways? So it's kind
of really strong elderly right-wing people. Not my immediate family, but extended family on my wife's side.
I love how you had to clarify.
Good time. If any member of my family was a right-wing bigot or anything, they would have got called on it way earlier than that. They'd have never gotten that far.
Or the invite to dinner.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's why I don't go to dinner very often. I don't know if you can see my cat climbing on the guitar there, but she's doing that for some reason.
Oh, I got a little bit of kitty.
They're both here. Come on, guys. No. Okay, they're not saying hello. They're just watching me from over there.
Do you train your cats to do anything, or you just let them be cats?
I did. I trained the first one with clicker training to sit and do some tricks. And then I decided I don't really care to do this to the cat anymore. So I just kind of, if I still like click my finger and it'll still do the thing, but I just don't ever do it to them anymore. I'm like, just be a cat. It's fine.
Yeah.
My cats know how to do all the important tricks, such as when I open the door, they come running down the stairs to see who it is. And they're like, meow, 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 and make me feel welcome when I get home.
That's adorable. So,
that's the important trick. They come and see me as soon as I get home.
I feel like that's 50-50 with cats. If you're going to get the run to the door.
Which is weird because we get both of them. They both do it. Like, usually one of them's the one that doesn't bother, but they both get up and come down the stairs from where, like, they'll come from wherever they are in the basement, whatever, to see who's at the door.
Do you give them treats when you get home?
Nope.
Oh, no, they just like you.
They just both really love affection. Well, one of them, the boy Danny in particular loves affection. The girl Artemis she likes looking at us a lot more than that. She likes to be near us, but not be touched by us. Mm-hmm. So she'll often sit right beside you and stare at you. But if God forbid you pet her, she will disappear.
I'm joking, but I was going to say, you got an Audie kitty.
Me and my wife joke about that. They were like, oh, wow, one of our cats is autistic. That's amazing.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, they talk about, you know, how pets like kind of reflect their owners in weird ways.
Their owners. I wonder if that's... Yeah.
And I do have another friend of mine who has a pair of dogs, and she's like, that's our ADHD dog, and that's our autistic dog, just like me and my husband.
I'm wondering, is there a little bit of projection?
Yeah,
there?
Exactly. That's why I said at the beginning that I was joking that no one thinks I'm trying to diagnose animals.
Although by all logic, there would be variation
in the neurotype
of every animal.
Sure.
So maybe we just got lucky and got the nice ones. Okay. So let me think. Was there anything else we wanted to discuss? I didn't come with a pen and paper this week with questions.
The other thing, I don't know, about that article we've been on and off talking about, because there was that guess that maybe it's like about 50-50 of like Audis who can live relatively independent and Audis who need like more 24/7 type care. I started like brainstorming like how I haven't gone very far, but if anybody else likes this idea, you know, hit me up or something. DM me A-Team Podcast on Instagram. And
there you go.
But
or use Auticom.
There's got to be a way that we can have like Audis helping Audis. Like
the suggestion
program for like ABA, and they do the little, I'm going to have a slideshow and teach you some things, and then you go work with them. Kind of like the training I got when I worked at the Autism Society in North Carolina doing respite care. But I was like, I can make trainings like that that are way more humanizing based on all of this information and experience I've accrued. Could I make trainings that like more independent Audis like take the trainings and then they go work with and like provide kind of support services to other Audis? Like that would be really cool.
Coupled with that would just be the fact that you would be interacting with a peer.
Yeah.
I think that would be huge. Like, do you know the way they talk about elderly people often being isolated on their own, and they have groups like chats and stuff, people who
we're social creatures, all of us humans.
Yeah. Like, I know contrary to popular belief, but autistic people also would like to talk to interact with them, and maybe on slightly different terms. But yes, I think your idea about that, like the idea of having, like, well, from my own point of view, I think I learn a lot from the autistic people I'm around and the experience, and like it validates me as a human being and my way of being, even though it can be very different to other autistic people. But the fact that I can accept them and they accept me allows a lot of healing for yourself inside. Mm-hmm. And I imagine being, for want of a better term, profoundly autistic could have a certain effect on how you function. Because I know it's like, I'm thinking, they used to take autistic people and put them away in a home, mm-hmm. and then they go from where they were to probably an awful lot worse off. Because, and I'm wondering, is that indirectly by having really parents and supportive people who are like that woman who they would do anything for their child, but they also subconsciously message their child that their child's incapable of doing anything. Whether they realize it or not, they must be doing that. They do not treat them as a human being. Mm-hmm. Yes, they might not be able to be a self-function all the time by themselves, and maybe they do need 24-hour care, but there also has to be a time where they're treated and spoken to.
What like drives me bonkers when some people talk about certain traits, like and they're trying to do that attention thing or the victim thing of like, well, my child has like self-harming behaviors and you don't understand because you can live independently. And in my mind, just like if my child had self-harming behaviors, I am looking for everything in the environment. I'm sure they've started. I just told myself not to bring this up, Tango, and then I feel passionately about it. I just feel like sometimes people will see the trait and be like, there's nothing I can do about it. That's just what my autistic child does. So I'm going to post about it so that I can, you know, like not get not the emotional signal, high. But, yeah, get the
it
emotional
is absolutely
high.
Virtue signaling. And it's absolutely virtue. Look
I'm
at how good a person I am.
Empathetically, fully tending to my child. I'm not calling everyone
absolutely.
Out. Absolutely. there's a little bit of a pet peeve there.
The thing is, I don't think they can even. I don't think they're doing like I don't. I'm not saying they're doing it on purpose,
exactly.
And they're probably doing the best.
Okay, and that's what part of my training idea is. What am I training people on? Just like, just because you're autistic doesn't mean you automatically know these things of just like looking for different kinds of sensory things in the environment, how much autonomy the child has, how much emotional connection is happening, because we all need some sort of emotional attunement or social engagement. And yeah, if your parent is constantly signaling that you're a burden or you can't do things, maybe they're not getting that.
Well, it's that other thing where they're like, we need you to be able to do this, 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 and this. And they're looking at the results. And this is how ABA comes about, mm-hmm. because they want certain outcomes, yeah. not saying, this is a being that does not do these things.
That's my main issue with ABA. Is that
but it's still a being, and we have to interact with it in the way so that deep. That person feels, or like in the way that person can interact or to the best of their ability yeah. and maybe help them grow what strengths.
ABA like, has an outcome yeah. and they're trying to like back the child or the client into that out to like fit that mold into the outcome. My approach, what a lot of us have talked about is the client centered approach of just like, mm-hmm. where's the client at and what do they need? And then how do we shift the environment? I'm not trying to make you put your clothes on exactly like this. I want to help you be clothed in the world. So like, what do we have to do? Let me build something just for you to help you put your clothes on. It's not going to be the ABA.
Or help
to do it.
Help you understand why you should do it.
Yes.
Like, help you understand that it is cold outside and you need to,
exactly.
it doesn't matter what color
them,
it is.
Meeting
or,
you where you at. Yeah. What is,
you don't
what
care
is the
about
struggle
colors,
in the first place?
All these. Yeah, you don't care about the color, the shape of the clothes, but do they protect you from the cold, which is what we're trying to get to, so that you can see a purpose in it that is value to you mm-hmm. as opposed to value to society or to other people.
And I just
like,
think
you want clothes so that you don't
the way that
get
you
cold.
Automatically jumped on that, like that would be so that could potentially be so helpful to a parent or something struggling with their, and you like immediately noticed that or thought to ask that or something. That's why I feel like this kind of Audie's Helping Audie's program could be really helpful. A lot of us are
there's a certain level
of
insight
and experience. Realize. Yeah. You're going to ask questions or think of things that maybe that parent didn't even think of in the first place.
It's like our brains are wired slightly different.
It's kind of like big, I guess maybe what I'm thinking also is something like a big brother, big sister, but like big Audie. I don't know.
Or just people who have more spoons giving a few spoons to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
If you have some to spare and you can help out, like, yeah, it's certainly worth thinking about and like trying to process an idea that and see if it is workable. Mm-hmm. It might not be, but it's never a harm to try.
Yeah. Well, and, another thing I'm hoping to do, this is going to take a bit of a runway, but the platform that Audicom is hosted on, it's called Mighty Networks, and they are changing how their software works in December. Basically changing a lot of options I have as a host for what we can do in there and who can see what or be where. And so instead of just having all autistic members, I'm going to be able to open up and have separate spaces. So there'll still be spaces that are only for adult autistic members. And then I might be able to have separate spaces where different kinds of allies, like parents or friends or whatever, can come in and ask questions. And so we can have that space without losing the private space. Because even from the beginning of launching Audicom, you know, I wanted the private space to be the safe space, for lack of I actually mm-hmm, kind of hate mm-hmm. that term, but just somewhere private that we could speak to each other without being interrupted. But I always wanted that to turn into a bigger conversation so that once we have our private chats with each other, what can we learn and then turn around and offer back out to the greater public? And so mm-hmm. this change coming to Mighty Networks in December might help me take like the next steps towards that kind of plan. I would love to host I was just journaling about this today when I read Mighty Networks was having this update. I would love to host some sort of like panels where I have, you know, 4 or 6 autistic folks and parents, you know, can like come in and ask questions of this panel of autistic folks. Just like stuff I've heard people talk about they wish existed, but we never see. Or like I hear certain, we complain about, oh, parents don't want to hear advice from adult autistics, but there are some. And so maybe we should build spaces for them to ask those questions.
And at least let the ones who are willing to hear it. Yeah, absolutely. So absolutely.
I have hopes for that.
We talk about a lot of things on A-Team Podcasts, and sometimes it's hard to keep up, even for us. You can find links and more information about some of the topics we cover in your podcast provider's description of this episode. Thanks for listening.